ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिदां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथिदां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्तुन्यन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्तं न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः. We are continuing our discussion of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And I already mentioned at the very beginning that there are four important topics discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter. This to be kept in mind. This is a continuation of the same discussion. The first important topic that is discussed is the impermanent nature of this world, this phenomenal world, including our own body, our own mind, the changeability, the ephemeral nature of all that you perceive and experience with the mind and the senses. This is one important point discussed. The second point that is discussed is beyond and behind this impermanent phenomenal world, there is one permanent eternal reality, that is Atman. So the body comes and goes. Dekhinosmin yatha dehi kaumaram yavanam jara tatha dehantara praptihi dhirastatrana mukhyati. So this body comes and goes. It comes into existence, which we call birth, then lives for many years, it gets old, it decays and disappears, which we call death. But behind this, there is something that doesn't die when the body disappears. And that is the Atman. And that Atman is described to be avinashi ajo nitya shashudoyam purano na hanyade hanyamane sharire. You find that Atman is birthless and deathless. It is beyond the six changes that we talk about in Vedantic tradition. That is birth, existence, growth, evolution, decay and death. That is sarvikara. Jayade, asti, vardhade, viparinamade, apakshyade, vinashyati. These are six changes. Now, body belongs to time and space. And Atman is beyond time and space. These are two subjects. The third topic that is discussed in the entire second chapter, which is one of the most important chapters in the Gita, is the concept of Swadharma. If the body is changeable, impermanent, and if there is a permanent eternal reality behind this body, then in what way does it help us in our everyday life? In facing our problems, in doing our duties and responsibilities, in our interaction with others, in what way it is a practical utility of this great spiritual thought, spiritual ideal? So that is explained in the concept of Swadharma. So once we understand that we are not just this body, which is changing all the time, not the mind, which is also equally changeable, or the intellect, which is also not very stable all the time. Now, in what way is it of any use to us in everyday life? So when we interpret and define ourselves to be something that is eternal, behind this body, that is unchanging, then we will be able to look upon this world and smile at this world. Not that we run away from the world, or we neglect our duties and responsibilities, or we become indifferent. We will lose enthusiasm for our work and its goals. Rather, you will be able to look upon the whole question of life and existence from a higher perspective. So that will actually help us to plunge into the field of action with greater enthusiasm, with greater effectiveness, and with the greater concentration and integration of human energy resources, which is what we are going to discuss in the coming verses today. So actually, this philosophy helps us to live more intelligently in this world, with less worries. What worries us is not something worth worrying about. So once we stop expecting permanence from the impermanent world, once we stop expecting a steady succession of continuous happiness from this world, which is certainly, by its very nature, inherently impermanent, we cannot have happiness if we are not willing to accept the fact that unhappiness is as much a reality of life in this world as happiness. So once we stop looking for permanent happiness at the empirical level, then unhappiness is not a problem. So it is a great practical philosophy, which is explained as swadharma, one's own natural spontaneous duty. When we do something in a way that gives us a feeling of inner contentment, a feeling of inner completeness, a joy at the way we have done our duty and at what we have done, and which is our responsibility, without worrying and without expecting too much. If we always expect 100% success from every endeavor we undertake, then we are doomed to face the problem of unhappiness and failure. So failure will not shock us when we stop expecting success at every step in our life. Now, this is the practical utility. It is called swadharma, which we will continue discussing today, because we have been discussing swadharma for the last 3-4 sessions. That's the third important topic in the Gita. The fourth important topic, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the fourth important topic is an analysis of the characteristics of a man or a woman of steady wisdom. It is called Sthita Prajnasi Lakshanani. It means characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person of steady wisdom. So today we will continue our discussion of swadharma. In the last session, Lord Krishna stated in the 40th verse, Neha Bhikramana Shosti Pratyavayona Vidyate Sarpam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bhayat. So there are certain questions that we are likely to ask. I am not repeating, but I have to repeat a few of the important points I made in the last session to connect with what we are going to discuss today. So this swadharma has got many advantages. First of all, it's our natural characteristic. Secondly, when we do that, we feel a kind of inner contentment. And then another important advantage is, we don't seek swadharma, it comes to us. So swadharma is subhava niyatam karma. A duty or a responsibility that comes to us by virtue of our profession, by virtue of our qualifications, our natural preparedness, aptitude, and a kind of psychological, spiritual inheritance. That is swadharma. Now, in this 40th verse, Lord Krishna says, in this swadharma, when you perform your duty as swadharma, there is no abhikramanasya. So, അഭിക്രമനാശ മീൻസ് അഭിക്രമ മീൻസ് പ്രാരംഭ ബിഗിനിങ് നൗ ലോർഡ് കൃഷ്ണ ഗീവ്സ് ദ എക്സാമ്പിൾ ശങ്കരാചാര്യ ഇൻ ഹിസ് ഭാഷ്യ ഗീവ്സ് ദ എക്സാമ്പിൾ when you in agriculture you may prepare the field, remove the weeds and grass, irrigate the field, sow the seed, and then it sprouts. Then if you neglect and completely forget the other responsibilities, when you come back to the place after 1 year, you find whatever you have done has gone in vain. It is called abhikramanasha. You have started something, it is completely gone, disappear, it completely is lost. So in Swadharma, there is no problem. If you perform any activity as your Swadharma, and then if you do not, if you are not able to continue that action, that responsibility, that activity, still whatever little you have done has given you a spiritual bank deposit. That's what Lord Krishna says. There is nothing is lost and you are never late. That is the advantage of Swadharma. So any action, any good noble deed, even our day-to-day responsibilities, a professor, a doctor, an engineer, a factory worker, if you do that Swadharma, immediately the action may produce the result, but the attitude with which you have done it will generate an inner spiritual result. And that becomes a kind of spiritual wealth that we will inherit even when we are born again in the next life. So that is why it is said, even if you do not fully succeed, or if you are not going to continue your duty till you completely succeed, still whatever you have done will benefit you, will produce some useful results. That's why Swalpam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bhayat. So this dharma, even if little, Swalpa means very little, if you practice, immediately it bears results. Because that produces a spiritual wealth, a spiritual inheritance in our mental system. And when we are born again, these good activities, good thoughts or good deeds will produce a samskara, a vasana, a vritti, a sankalpa, a spiritual deposit, so to speak, which you inherit when you are born again. The second problem that could be asked is, Pratyavaya means actually the opposite result. So Lord Shankaracharya gives the example, for example, if you are sick and if you take medicine and then you stop taking medicine after some time before you are completely recovered from your illness, then that non-continuation, or if you stop taking medicine, actually can produce opposite results. The disease may aggravate. These are two possible problems. So Swadharma is nothing but just a change of perspective towards life, duties and day-to-day work. It doesn't cost anything. You don't have to give up your natural profession or duties and responsibilities. Only change your attitude towards the work. What we do. It could be any kind of work. That is Swadharma. So now, in the 41st verse, this discussion continues. Vyavasaya atmika buddhihi ekeha gurunandana bahushyakahi anantasya buddheha avyavasayinam. So, two types of human attitude towards work and life are explained here. One is vyavasaya atmika buddhi. The other is the opposite of it, avyavasaya atmika buddhi. Means single-pointed concentration, dedication of the mind towards whatever we do is called vyavasaya atmika buddhi. It is eka, means one. It is one-pointed. Bhushyaka hi anantasya buddheha avyavasayina. Those who are just opposite of this, those who are not concentrated, those who are not one-pointed in whatever they do, those who do not have sraddha, a sense of sanctity and sacredness towards whatever they do. In their case, what happens, you know, their mind is completely blunt. Now, how to stick to this concentration? In the last class, we discussed Swadharma and Paradharma. Swadharme nidhanam shreya, paradharmo bhayavaha, Lord Krishna says. Our spiritual benefit, our common good, is in the performance of Swadharma. Paradharma is its opposite of Swadharma. It is scary, dangerous. It creates fear. Now, why Swadharma is considered to be the royal highway to spiritual liberation and also material prosperity? The reason is, when you perform Swadharma, you are able to integrate all your mental, psychological, spiritual and physical energy resources. When we do something else, which we know not to be our duty, which we know to be the opposite of our duty and responsibility, then what happens, you know, mind gets scattered. So I gave the example, the funny example rather, in the last session, you know, to tell a lie, you have to work very hard. You have to plan, you have to think, and you should, your lawyer, if it's in a legal profession, an attorney will train you. You should tell the same lie with consistency. With this way, logical sequence, the lie number two should not contradict lie number one, then the verdict will be against you. And also, when we try to do things which we know to be the opposite of Swadharma, you find there is friction, there is conflict. That conflict is naturally expressed and felt by people with a sense of value. Those who do not have any sense of value, in their case, the conflict will be much less expressed. So, when you practice Swadharma, there is a natural, spontaneous integration of our mental energy resources. Because eka, eka, kurunandana, eka means vyavasayatmika buddhi eka. That's the first image. So this vyavasayatmika buddhi, the intellect or the mind of a person who is performing his duty as Swadharma, is one-pointed determination. Because in his case, all his senses and mind are focused on one single work. That's why the great spiritual teachers are able to do great things, because when they do certain things, they are not distracted. We are not able to remember what we hear, or we are not able to do things properly when we are doing, because our mind or mental energies get scattered. All the five senses of perception are so many windows, so many channels through which our mental energy flows out. So when we read certain things, and when we hear the sound coming from the street, actually mind, a part of the mental energy, goes through the channel of the sense of hearing to the car from which the sound is coming. And when you do certain things, if you are eating a candy, the sense of taste also takes away a fraction of the mental concentration. That is called dugindriya. Rasanendriya. The sense of taste. This rasanendriya. And when you are holding a pen in your hand, a pencil in your hand very strongly, firmly pressing it, then the sense of touch also takes a fraction of your mental energy towards the pencil. And also, when we here, when we see certain things in our mind, even by looking at the audience in front of me, if mentally I'm seeing the San Francisco Bridge, then I won't be able to concentrate on what I'm teaching here. Because my mind is drawn to the image, the visual image of the San Francisco Bridge, which I've seen through memory line, mind walking backward. In other words, all the time, mind or mental energy is being dragged out of our mind. So mind is being dissipated, mental energy gets fragmented. So that's why we frequently are not able to do things properly. When we are become anxious or overjoyed, all the time, suddenly the mental energy gets fragmented. You heard of great yogis, Vivekananda, or many, all the great spiritual teachers in all traditions you find. When they read certain things, they are able to do that with great concentration, they are able to remember. Because when they did that, what happens, you know, all these channels of distraction are shut. And mind is completely focused on what they are reading. So they are able to remember that after some time. So it's called Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. The opposite of it is Avyavasayatmika, means the opposite of it. Now, Vyavasayatmika Buddhi is related to Swadharma. Avyavasayina, Avyavasayi means the one who doesn't have this focus or one-sided concentration. That person is practicing Paradharma. That's why when we do things which we know will opposite of what we ought to do, suddenly mind gets fragmented. So Lord Krishna says, this Vyavasayatmika Buddhi is natural for those who do their duty as Swadharma. Swadharma is essentially something positive. So again, when we practice Swadharma, actually we evolve in spiritual life. Whenever we do our duty with a sense of dedication, we are able to slowly evolve in spiritual life. And we are able to link ourselves to a higher ideal. That's why, you know, Swadharma is the opposite of ultra-pragmatism or utilitarianism. Because it is essentially a path leading to higher spiritual goal. Now, in this, of course, those who are interested, you'll be surprised there are different schools of thought in the interpretation of Swadharma in the three schools of Vedanta. You may have heard of the three main schools of Vedanta. One is Advaita of Shankaracharya, the other is Visishta Advaita of Ramanuja, and Dvaita of Madhvacharya. According to Shankara's system, the reality is one, that is one impersonal, attributeless, immanent, transcendental, omnipresent reality, which is beyond definition and description and explanation, which is the divine truth present in all of us. According to Ramanuja, this highest reality is, it's called Saguna, Sakara, etc. It has got a form, it has got qualities, and it is the cause of the evolution into this Jagat. And according to Madhva system, everything is different from everything else. I can explain this with a simple illustration. If you think of a triangle, on the top, let us say we have God, Ishvara is called. The two other sides, we have got Jagat and Jiva. Now, according to Shankaracharya, at the highest spiritual experience, you feel that everything in this world is one spiritual reality. Ekameva Advitiyam is called. In the Ramanuja system, that God is present as Antaryami, as the inherent, immanent reality in everything in this world. But still this world and different things are permanently different from God. But God, an aspect of the God is present in everything. According to Madhva system, everything in this world is different from everything else. So, അക്കോർഡിംഗ് ടു ശങ്കരാചാര്യ വ്യവസായാത്മിക ബുദ്ധി നിശ്ചയ സ്വഭാവ സമ്യക് പ്രമാണജനിതത്വാത് വെരി ശങ്കരാചാര്യ സീസ്. സോ അക്കോർഡിംഗ് ടു ദി ടീച്ചർ ഓഫ് നോൺ ഡ്യുവലിസം ദി വ്യവസായാത്മിക ബുദ്ധി ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് നിശ്ചയ സ്വഭാവ വൺ ഇമ്പോർട്ടൻ്റ് ക്യാരക്ടറിസ്റ്റിക് ഓഫ് ദിസ് കോൺസെൻട്രേഷൻ ഈസ് ദ പേഴ്സൺ ഹാസ് ഡിസൈഡഡ് ഐ മീൻസ് he has determined that this is my duty, this is my swadharma, this is my responsibility and duty. So there is so much of steadiness and determination and total freedom from fragmentation of mental energy, and that is the most visible, most important characteristic of a person who does his duty or her duty with the sense of sanctity and sacredness and with the full conviction, well, this is my way to the highest spiritual goal. Well, when you look upon everything you do as the royal highway to the highest spiritual goal, then everything related to that duty becomes sacred and sanctified. So then what happens, you know, it is nishchaya swabhava pramanajanitatva Shankaracharya. Ramanuja also says more or less the same thing. Samyak yukti nirnitanam matanam aikyameva ityarthaka. So that again, the unity of concentration, oneness of all possible human energy resources. At the very practical level, if we can do our duty, whatever it could be, housewife, factory worker, professor, anyone, this is my work, this is my way of justifying my existence, this is my way of doing the best for me. If that is our attitude, then every action becomes a sacred, a sanctified offering to the Lord. Now, in the case of a highly elevated spiritual person, this attitude becomes natural, second nature. In the case of a spiritual seeker, this is something we have to slowly cultivate. So that point we already discussed earlier. So whenever we discuss any spiritual characteristic or any spiritual speciality, let us say, of a highly evolved person, Shankaracharya says, that great quality becomes second nature to a highly evolved person and becomes a property, a quality that we have to slowly develop within ourselves. And Madhvacharya says, Vivasayo nischeha sahi buddhi atma yadhatmi purvika. It is something that naturally comes to you when you reach this highest spiritual liberation. Now, in the next three verses, Lord Krishna is discussing something very interesting. That is, Yamimam Pushpidam Vajam Pravadandhya Vibaschidaha Veda Vadrata Partha Na Annidastidi Vadinaka. Interestingly, you find Lord Krishna is now discussing what happens to a person who doesn't have this ideal of Swadharma. So, as an introduction, I must say, you know, Vedanta is called Uttaramimamsa. And the teacher of Vedanta, Uttaramimamsa, is Vyasa, Badarayana Sutras, is called Brahma Sutras. It is 554 Sutras, slight variations are there. This is the basic text, logical textbook of Vedanta. The foundation of this book again is the Upanishads, the Jnana Kanda of the Vedic literature. Now, so it is called Uttaramimamsa or Vedanta. Vedanta means the peak of knowledge. Vidhatu, vid means to know. Anta means the final word or the essence. Both are the same. Now there is another school of thought. It's called Purvamimamsa. Purvamimamsa is kind of Epicurean philosophy. They were not materialists as Epicurus was. He was a Greek philosopher who lived in the 3rd BC. He's a Greek thinker. Epicureanism, in a way, is a kind of materialistic thinking. It's a kind of called enlightened materialism. But Purvamimamsa was very similar to Epicureanism. Certainly, it was not hedonism as is frequently misunderstood. Now, the teacher, the exponent of this system of philosophy is called Jaimini. And Jaimini here also wrote sutras. Now, according to their system, the whole purpose of human life is to practice the Vedic rituals mentioned in the Karmakanda of Vedic literature. So, we should know that if you talk about Vedas, it's a huge corpus, huge body of literature. The entire Vedic literature doesn't expound this highest spiritual philosophy. It also teaches rituals which are to be practiced by those who want to enjoy comforts in heaven. Again, that is a very important point which I want to repeat. Maybe I may have to repeat again. You know, the word heaven in Vedic literature, is totally different from what the word heaven means in the Abrahamic religious tradition. In Christian tradition, heaven is associated with angels. There is a spiritual element in heaven, in the word heaven, in the concept of heaven. But in Vedic literature, there is no spiritual element. Heaven was sought after. It was sought after by people who did not care for the highest spiritual philosophy, of the highest spiritual evolution. Those who wanted to enjoy good things in this world, they used to perform rituals to propitiate different deities, devas and devadas. And so you find Pashyema Sharadasatam, Jivema Sharadasatam, Bhuyasa Sharadasatam. These are mantras they used to utter. And they used to utter these mantras while putting offering in the burning fire. This ancient, the most ancient Aryan Vedic tradition, which predates the Zoroastrian religion, which also considers fire as the highest concept of God. So, according to them, the whole purpose of human life was to go on practicing rituals so that you can live for a very long life, you can have plenty of wealth, plenty of children, wonderful house, and then after death you can go to heaven. And again, it's a continuation of the same happy, prosperous life. It's kind of five-star hotel at the celestial region. This is what heaven signifies in Vedic literature. So in the Gita, when you discuss Vedanta, you find Shankaracharya, the great Vedantic scholar, teacher and saint, he criticizes those who consider heaven as the highest goal. So we should remember, it is not the heaven as understood by Saint Augustine in his City of God, you know, the famous theological classic of Saint Augustine, the 5th century Christian theologian, or mentioned in the letters of Saint Paul and others. This heaven is not, it has nothing to do with spirituality. The heaven as understood here. Vedanta considers heaven to be a hindrance to your spiritual growth. A desire for going to heaven means a desire to continue the same happy, jolly life that you live in this world. You want to continue even after death. Nothing beyond that. So, these 42nd, 43rd and 44th verses, Lord Krishna is actually criticizing those who consider this heaven as the highest goal in life. Because they consider enjoyment as the only purpose of human existence. So you find Yamimam Pushpidam Vajam Pravadandya Vibaschidaha Veda Vadrada Patha Nanidasti Vadinaka. That is the verse. So Lord Krishna says, people who don't have the spiritual wisdom, this Vivasayatmika Buddhi, this concept of Swadharma, what they do, they think Let us perform these rituals just to please a God. You know, in ancient Vedantic tradition, Vedic tradition, the Agni, Varuna, Mitra, etc., they were in the Vedic polytheism, which believed in the multiplicity of devas and devadas, deities. Behind every natural phenomenon, there is a divine reality. So it is kind of polytheism. It is not pantheism, because pantheism also can be found in the Vedic literature. It's kind of a polytheism. You believe in different deities. And you also find monotheism in many of the Vedic sutras. So here Lord Krishna is criticizing those who do not have any higher spiritual transcendental ideal in their life, who consider that life means a continuous perpetual enjoyment and success. You can imagine a person who always wants success is bound to be depressed at some point of time, because continuous success is an impossibility. So Lord Krishna says, those unwise people who consider pleasure as the only purpose of human life, they say nanyadasti, means there is nothing else in this world. So it is a kind of, you know, I would say a kind of modified or Vedic counterpart, Vedic equivalent of Epicureanism, that is fine. This continues, again, you know, kamatmana surgapara janma karma phalapradam kriya vishesha bahulam bhogeshwarya gatim prati. Those who are full of desires and do not seek anything higher than material enjoyment, they look upon going to heaven as the highest purpose, goal of human existence. It's called, so surgapara, those who consider surga as the highest goal. Again, I should remind you, surga literally is translated in English, heaven. But heaven, as understood in the Abrahamic religion, has a spiritual element in that. Heaven is associated with the close proximity of God. It is a abode of angels. So you, in the Christian literature, you find, let us talk about some heavenly topics, subjects, means speak about some spiritual topics. But that is not the meaning in this particular context. So when you read the translations of these verses, you may misunderstand, because there is criticism of heaven. Here, criticism of heaven means criticism of hedonism and Epicureanism, or the cult of material enjoyment. So Lord Krishna continues, such people, what do? They look upon this heaven as the highest goal, and they go on practicing various sacrifices. So to give an example, in the ancient Vedic literatures, in this an elaborate session, if you continue attending this class, you can get a full grip of the growth and evolution of Indian philosophy, which is so huge, because the Gita deals with so many systems of Indian philosophy. So Lord Krishna is referring to, you know, kriya vishesha bhagulam bhogeshwarya gatim prati. So in these sections of the Vedas, which do not deal with the highest spiritual good of humanity, they mostly discuss material pleasures in this life and also after death in heaven. It is totally different from the approach of Vedanta. Vedanta means the highest spiritual, transcendental spirit philosophy of Vedic tradition. That is Vedanta. But that is only one part of Vedic literature. The other, the later part is called Uttara Mimamsa, the later part. The former part is called Karma Kanda, Purva Kanda of Vedas, deals with these rituals. So these rituals are normally threefold. So those who are interested, called Apurva Vidhi, Niyama Vidhi, and Parisankhya Vidhi. Vidhi in Sanskrit means injunction. So in these rituals, Vedic literature, you find Surga Gamo Yajeda. There is one vithi. It is called Apurva Vithi. Literally, you know what it means. Surga kamaha means those who want to go to heaven. What he should do? He should practice the yajna, yaga, etc. He should collect a lot of materials, should call a group of priests and perform a Vedic sacrifice. But remember, many of these Vedic ritualists were very Spartan and ascetic in their lifestyle. They had a very highly evolved ethical code. They followed a very rigid, very Spartan, very ascetic way of life. So they used to get up 3:30 in the morning, chant these Vedas, then study the rituals, fasting, maybe eating only once a day. So it was a very ascetic way of life. So it is you. So we should not you should mistake it to be some kind of a hedonism. Even Epicureanism is also an approximation to explain the system of philosophy. So one kind of injunction was those who want to practice, those who want to go to heaven, should perform apurva vidhi. Means they should perform yajna. That is given in an injunction which is called apurva vidhi. Another one is called niyama vidhi. That means if there are so many rituals, they will just decide one ritual. Then this they called, you know, parisankhya vidhi. So I'm not going to these details. Those who are interested in this, I will discuss during the Q&A, which so we are not going to discuss those things. So Lord Krishna is coming heavily upon these people who never believed in anything transcendental. So that's why he uses the word Vedavadarataha, Avibaschitaha, means those who do not care for the highest truth, they are called Avibaschitaha. So they go on reciting these Vedas, these ritualistic systems, and then go on talking about life and enjoyment. Lord Krishna says they are unwise. They don't have the highest goal of spiritual life in modern times. For your information, many of these Vedic rituals have become extinct, and in India they do perform in some ways, but then they are now just a curiosity. One great man who worked hard to study and document and film and move, and you know, these rituals was Fritz Stahl, who was a Dutchman, a great professor Indologist who was in Berkeley, California State University, Berkeley, who worked for 40 years to study, to go to India and study these ancient rituals, because surprisingly he found that the oldest existing religious rituals that you can still find happening on this planet. We do not know what all rituals the ancient Egyptians or Greeks or Abyssinians or Babylonians practiced. They all have become completely extinct. If you want to know anything about ancient Babylonian civilization, or Egyptian civilization, Sumerian civilization, you have to go to a library and read book, or you have to go to a historical museum. But many of these rituals are still being practiced, and great scholars who have been continuing this tradition for the last 6,000 years, they are still there. And there are families where the fire, this fire sacrifice, fire is still burning for the last 3,000, 4,000 years. So that is the, so this man who was a professor, Fritz Stahl, so he wrote a famous book, Altar Fire. Agni, each two volumes, each is much bigger than Encyclopedia Britannica volume. And this man spent all his lifetime for this. Now BBC and many modern channels have documented some of these things. So, but Lord Krishna says, all very wonderful, but those rituals have got only archaic message, relevance. They don't have any higher spiritual value to teach modern times. So Lord Krishna is slowly coming to the subject. What is the real message we can learn from the Vedic tradition? So the discussion continues. So first of all, he has to contempt these Epicurean thinkers. കാമാത്മാന സ്വർഗപര ജന്മ കർമ്മഫലപ്രദാം ക്രിയാവിശേഷ ബഹുലാം ഭൂഗൈശ്വര്യഗതിയും പ്രതി. ദേ പെർഫോം ഓൾ ദി സെലബ്രേറ്റ് റിച്വൽസ് ബട്ട് ഓൺലി പർപ്പസ് ഈസ് എൻജോയ്മെന്റ്, നത്തിങ് മോർ. കൈൻഡ് ഓഫ് എൻലൈറ്റൻഡ് വി കെൻ ഗിവ് എ കോൾ ഇറ്റ് ഹിഡോണിസം വിത്ത് എ സ്ട്രോങ് സ്പിരിച്വൽ ആൻഡ് വിത്ത് നോട്ട് സ്പിരിച്വൽ ഹെവ് എത്തിക്കൽ അസറ്റിക് ഫൗണ്ടേഷൻ. The 43rd verse is bhogaishwarya prasaktanam taya apakrita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadho navidhiyate. We are talking about vyavasayatmika buddhi, that person who practices swadharma, whatever may be your duty, your work, whatever may be your responsibility and duty, still you do that with a sense of sanctity and sacredness, a kind of inherent morality, a natural humanism, with a sense of sanctity and sacredness and respect. That is swadharma. You need not perform an elaborate ritual to be spiritual in life. If you are working in a hospital, if you are a hospital nurse, if you are a doctor, if you are a factory worker, if you are a staff of the fire engine, you know, firefighting, still you can be spiritual. That's the kind of spiritual philosophy that Lord Krishna is unfolding in the coming verses. So, what we are discussing now, this is the opposite of it. So, Lord Krishna, the teacher, is trying to create an awareness of the glory of the spiritual message that we are going to discuss by giving a picture of the opposite of it, so that you should be ready for the higher message. So, bhogaishwarya prasaktanam taya apakrita chetasam. Lord Krishna says, these people are so much obsessed with pleasure, enjoyment. So what happens, you know, so their sense of wisdom, the sense of discerning mind, the wisdom is gone. They have no wisdom. That means their obsession, their attachment for sense pleasures has taken away their wisdom from them. So they don't have a sense of propriety or sense of righteousness right now. So, taya apakrita chedasa means mind is stolen, taken away from them. Means sense of propriety, sense of what is real, what is right and what is wrong is completely gone. Then, such people will not have this vyavasayatmika buddhi. They will never be able to practice this concentration because their mind is scattered. Samadho navidhiyate, because their mind is scattered. So they will not be able to practice this vyavasayatmika buddhi. So the point is, Lord Krishna, before unfolding the great message of spirituality and contemplation on the one hand, and active life in this world on the other, a blending, a harmony of action and contemplation, a harmony of the secular and spiritual, and how to perform of secular duty in a spiritual way. So we need not just draw a line of demarcation. This is spiritual, this is secular. There is no such thing as secular for an enlightened person, because every secular duty can be done in a spiritual manner. So, that's what Lord Krishna is slowly going to unfold. Before that, he wants to give the picture of those who are not able to practice this, who go on performing rituals, which means they are creating a barrier between the secular and the spiritual. So, you go on worshipping and meditating for a long time in the temple or a church, any place of worship. Other times you are material, yes, secular. Lord Krishna says it is impossible, because the same mind is present in the temple and also outside the temple. The same mind functions within the church and also outside the church. So you should be able to practice spirituality not only within the church but also outside the church. So first of all, we should construct a bridge between the secular and spiritual, and slowly the secular will become spiritual. And finally, it will be spiritualization of the secular. The secular merges in the spiritual, within the spiritual. So that's what he is going to unfold in the coming verses. Before that, we will have interaction. maybe. In the next week, Friday, there will be no class. We have a big program. It's called Shanti Ashrama Retreat. You see, we will not have class next Friday, April the 26th, because of a Shanti Ashrama program the following day. The next class will be on Friday, May the 3rd, 7:30 p.m. Shanti Ashrama is a historical place. Many of you may not know. But it's sad if you don't know, but I want to inform you. The first monastery, Indian monastery, Vedic monastery, was founded about less than 100 miles away from here. It is called Shanti Ashrama, San Antonio Valley. A great Swami who was a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna came to this country and he was deputed by Vivekananda to come to California and start a Vedic monastery in San Antonio Valley in 1900. That is long before Indian diaspora came out to this place. And he ran this Vedic monastery for more than 2 years. So a large number of Americans, men and women both, went to studied under him yoga, Vedanta, all these scriptures, Gita, which we are discussing now. So that place, a very historical place. Unfortunately, there was a big fire in 1954, I think, in that place. So all the cabins, all the houses that this Swami constructed, except the one which was used as a shrine, were burned down. The shrine still remains intact. The place, the building that was used as a shrine in 1900 is still intact. So every year, on the last Saturday of April every year, we have a one-day retreat, so people from all over the United States will gather there, many of them from different places, and we'll have a one-day retreat, prayer and meditation and so on. The program begins at 11 o'clock in the morning. It will be over by around 5:30. So you have to remember the first attempt to bring Bhagavad Gita to the West happening here. I mean, in a formal manner, in an institutional manner, it happened here. So next Saturday, Saturday 26th, we will have the retreat. So we'll be busy making preparations on Friday. So the next class will be after the next Friday. Thank you. Now we'll have interaction.
Swami, in the beginning you mentioned briefly the advantage of, you know, a comprehensive spiritual understanding of our environment and our lives in contributing to our everyday lives. And would you elaborate on the relationship between, you know, the understanding of the comprehensive view of reality and our everyday life?
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, normally, most of our problems that we encounter in our everyday life, mental strife, depression, anxiety, are rooted in one fundamental problem. We think we are just this psychophysical mechanism, nothing more. So when something happens at the physical level, it's a big problem, it's a disaster. When something happens to our mind, we think everything is lost. But body, mind and intellect, all these do not constitute the essence of our real personality. These things come and go. See, I can imagine. Well, if you think of a man like Stephen Hawking, obviously not a yogi or Vedantin, as we understand, but still he could think of himself as something far beyond the body. There was nothing very wonderful about his body, as we all know. But he was a great man who made a great substantial contribution to modern futurological studies in modern physics and science. You know, so you can find many such people. Maybe they may not be aware of it. But at some point, they are able to look upon themselves as something beyond the body. If my body is not perfect, well, I need not worry too much about it. I can still do many great things in the world. Similarly, if we can think, if our mind is not happy now, it was happy yesterday, today is unhappy. It may again be happy and it goes on. Happiness, unhappiness, pain and pleasure and so on. So the mind also is changeable. So we need not worry too much about a problem we are encountering at a mental level, psychological level. Because we are something far beyond this body and mind. Now once we remember this, actually it gives you a kind of stability and steadiness to our mind. So when you define yourself as something beyond the mind, that you are the Atman, which is always steady and stable, once you connect yourself, your being, to this Atman, which is eternal, stable reality, then mind also slowly becomes stable. It is linked to the Atman, which is stable. So you are able to dismiss or overlook small problems with a degree of, well, it's okay. That's the nature of the world. When you say, well, that's the nature of the world, you don't worry too much about it. Actually, you're identifying yourself to be something beyond mind, beyond even the body. So this we do all the time. But when we do this consciously, and when we accept this idea that we, the real I, the real we, go far beyond mind and body. And that also, you know, in Vedanta, there are four fundamental realities. Of course, I'm not going to the asat, the absolute non-existence, I'm not dealing with. Paramarthika, Vyavaharika, and Pradibhasika. Three approaches in interpreting the absolute reality. Highest is Atman. And it always remains the same. It is eternal, it is omnipresent, it is immanent, and it is birthless, it is deathless. It's always the same reality. Below that, there is the Vyavaharika, it's called. Vyavaharika, the empirical reality. Our body, the San Francisco Bay, all the mountains, valleys, the Himalayas, all these natural things, our own body, our mind, our intellect, all these belong to the Vyavaharika, the empirical reality. Now very often, you know, we look upon the empirical reality as if it is absolute reality. See, when people lose money, for example, sometimes they commit suicide also. A billionaire may commit suicide if he loses $1 million. It is stupid in a way, because everyone intellectually knows that the money comes and goes. But when we lose sleep over the loss of job, loss of health, or bodily health, or wealth, we are actually forgetting the fact health is not expected to be permanent. Wealth is not expected to be eternal. That is a fact we all know intellectually, but we forget that fact. So people make fools of themselves committing suicide when they lose $1 million. You may have $1 trillion in the bank, but you lose your sleep when you lose $1,000. It is stupid. So the point is, an obvious fact which every child knows is forgotten by a wise man, an educated man, who suddenly loses sleep when he loses $100. So very often we interpret the impermanent as the permanent, forgetting the impermanent nature of the impermanent. Mistaking as for the permanent. So that is the root of many of the problems. See, grown up man, a wise man, you find in me. So, tells the child, my friend, two small little children fighting, my candy, he took away my candy. Oh, he broke my toy. A wise man, father, grandfather will tell you, oh, don't worry, we'll buy you, get you another one. No, but child may not be consoled. He thinks that candy is the very wonderful thing, an eternal thing. So we all think this money, wealth, all is permanent. As children mistake the candy as the only thing to be kept, they expect the candy should be always there. Nobody can take away his candy or his toy from him. So that's what really happens. So Vedanta helps you. It enables you to look upon the impermanent as the impermanent. It can save you from interpreting the non-eternal as the eternal. And that's the root of all root cause of all problems be anxiety, neurosis, depression, or melancholia. Very often, brooding over some problems that may have occurred sometime in the past and getting depressed, losing sleep. It's all because the person is not able to remember what he knows intellectually or apply that knowledge in real life. This world, this empirical world, comes and goes. It is changing. It is changeable by its very inherent nature. It is impermanent. So why lose sleep over that? It doesn't mean that you should be negligent, you should be lazy, you should be lethargic. No. Do your best. That's what Sudharma says. Do your best. With all enthusiasm. Naturally it will produce the expected result. But if you don't have 100% success 24 hours of the day, 7 days of the week, 365 days of the year, and whole lifetime, and if you get depressed, the fault is yours. That's what Lord Krishna says. So our mind plays a trick. So Vedanta helps you to stop it. Can you use something? You can get this in podcast. Okay. So this is the classes are available in the YouTube and also in podcast, where we have been discussing this subject for the last, I think, 3-4 sessions. But I would still try to explain. So detachment or non-attachment means you don't allow your obsession for the results to spiritually and psychologically enslave you. So, this is an example. If we can do our work to the best of our ability, putting all our mental powers for concentration, one-sided concentration and focus, naturally it will produce result. But when it does not produce the expected result, then we should not lose sleep over that. So, sukha-dukhe samokrutta labha alabho jaya achayo. We discussed this in the earlier version. Sukha-dukhe samokrutta means we should practice equanimity of mind in both sukha and dukkha. So, the only thing that we have to do is to stop looking for sukha all the time. Now we know, every intelligent person in this world knows that he can't have 100% success all the time. It is impossible. So I used to mention this. You find they talk about Napoleon. Oh, think of Napoleon without that damp battleground, the rainfall that fell the previous day. You know, he would have won the Battle of Waterloo. So the greatest military strategist also had a problem. So even if you are the best organizer in the world, you do everything exactly. Still, you find the best efforts, the best organization skills do not add up to the best result. You may get a result, but that result disappears tomorrow. So, what is the definition of success? Frequently, we define success on very temporary terms, you know. If the success doesn't give you a kind of inner contentment, permanent contentment, that success cannot be really called a success. You succeed, but you take pills for getting 4 hours sleep a day. Perfectionist societies like Japan, Switzerland, Sweden, Holland, where everything is fine, but the highest degree of depression in Japan, suicides and so on. So how do you explain this? So the best of your effort and the best of your organizational leadership skills cannot actually produce permanent, everlasting success. For success to be success should be there all the time. For that you should stop looking for success all the time. So the only way to avoid unhappiness is to stop looking for happiness all the time. When you don't look for happiness all the time, then unhappiness will not be a problem for you. So it will not be unhappiness, really speaking, you know. When you are able to look upon happiness and unhappiness with the same equanimity of mind, then there is no unhappiness for you, really. Only happiness. So actually change of perspective, which we are going to discuss in the coming verses. You find karma yoga, the psychology and the technology of karma yoga. Both are discussed in the coming verses. See, Lord Krishna says, yogastha kuru karmani sangam tektva dhananjaya siddhya siddhyo samabhuta samattam yoga uchyate. So whether you get the result or not, siddhya dasaddhi samattam. This is the psychology of karma yoga. Keeping the mind in a state of equanimity. Buddhi yukto jahatiha ube sugraduskade tasmad yogai ujjasa yoga karmasu kaushalam. Here you find the technology of karma yoga, which we are going to discuss in the coming sessions. Okay? Thank you.